get ready for the hottest talk show of the year, Crime Time Live, with your host, renowned attorney Scott Weinberg. Brought to you live by Clear Channel Radio and syndicated nationally on TalkZone.com. Discuss all the sizzling hot cases making headline news today and how you can protect your rights. And now, here's your host, Scott Weinberg.
Federal judge got caught up with drugs. A federal judge got caught up with drugs and a young woman, ruining his career, changing our impressions of judges forever. We'll get into that later this morning. Plus, are we allowing people to molest us when we go through airport scanners? Are our rights being violated every time we go through security at the airport? We'll discuss how one woman feels she was assaulted. That's right, assaulted at the airport. When are the police liable for police brutality? Can we resist an officer who's making a legal or an illegal arrest? We'll discuss it along with one of our top lawyers in town, Greg Young, about how a family man was simply trying to protect his family, and we'll see what happened. Can you run an assisted living operation out of a hotel? Can you? Because that's going on. We'll go to a story for that matter. There are regulations and controls that take care of the elderly, but can they do it in the back rooms or can they do it at a hotel? We'll discuss that, plus your comments and anything else I deem appropriate here on Crime Time Live here on 1310 AM. You stay tuned. We'll be right back.
My name's Rachel, and I'm 10 years old. I like riding my bike, playing soccer. And in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. My friends will drink, so I will too.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
My parents won't really know what's going on yet. I mean, I'll do okay in school, but when I drink, I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
Alcohol affects their judgment and their future. So start talking before they start drinking.
My parents won't believe it could happen to me.
For more information on teens and alcohol, and to learn what you can do, visit the web at stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Have you or a loved one been arrested or charged with a crime? Do you want to stay out of jail and keep your record clean? Hi, I'm attorney Scott Weinberg, host of Crime Time Live, heard Saturday mornings 11 to 12 noon on 1310 WDTW. Call my office anytime to protect your rights at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1, or go to our website at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1.com. We have payment plans for everyone's budget. There should never be a price on protecting your rights. Call 1-800-NO-JAIL and the number one right now.
Welcome back to the show. To drug charges. Is that crazy? A federal judge pleads guilty to drug charges. Let's get into this. A federal judge pled guilty Friday to 2 counts of drug possession and another charge, admitting he had paid a stripper to buy drugs for the two to use together. I swear I saw this movie. I got to think of where this movie was. Senior U.S. District Court Judge Jack Camp admitted to giving money to a woman to buy drugs, according to the federal prosecutors. He pleaded guilty to 2 counts of drug possession, as the federal prosecutors say. He also pleaded guilty of converting government property and giving a woman an issued laptop. It's not the only lap thing that he was using. As part of the plea deal, Camp did not plead guilty to firearms possession. Oh, so they dropped that. And the plea came shortly after the 67-year-old judge retired from the judiciary. Because remember, you can't get them off. They're appointed for life, right? Federal prosecutors accused Camp of giving the woman who's 26 years old, let's see, he's 67, she's 26, 26 years old, money to buy drugs, including cocaine, marijuana, and other drugs. The two then frequently used them together. They arrested the judge after October 1st after he tried to buy the drugs from an undercover officer. So here's the question. You know, these federal judges are appointed for life. You know that, right? They're appointed for life. Now, there's ways you can get them off to impeach them, but they're appointed for life. This guy wasn't going to retire. If he wasn't going to voluntarily step down, what would have happened? We'd have to impeach him because I'm telling you, you can't get these guys off. And it is so hard to get a federal judge off the bench. But what an abuse of power. We talk about that every single week here on Crime Time Live. What is it about officials that get a taste of power? I don't care if it's Kwame in the city. I don't care if it's an assistant attorney general who's trying to stalk a university student or if it's a federal judge. What is it about once you get a taste of power, you seem to think it's okay to abuse it? I mean, why is it that government officials turn to their own abuses when they're in power? What is it about it, about being in power? You want to join this conversation, you call me at 248-848-1310. Because I tell you, I am so sick of seeing government officials. I don't care if it's ones we don't elect. These are people that are appointed. And if you know what, that makes it even worse. Because then we have so much less controls. Oh, you might think it's a representative democracy we have, right? If we didn't elect the officials who end up appointing them and approving them on these judiciary committees, if we didn't elect those officials, then we wouldn't have those appointees there. You don't like it? Elect other officials, they'll appoint other people? That is too convoluted. I'm telling you right now, we need the elections so that we can choose who we put in these governmental positions. We should elect these judges. Problem is, the electorate, the people who have to vote for them, are so misinformed. They're so disenfranchised. They don't come out with informed opinions. They don't go to the voting booth knowing what the judge's stance is. When's the last time you went to the voting booth and you knew what the judge believed in or not? You might recognize an Irish name. You might recognize a local name that you've seen a sign for. But you tell me the last time you voted for a judge and you knew his stance on anything, you call me at 248-848-1310, because I'll bet you didn't know anything. And I'll bet you know what? Most lawyers that I deal with, they don't know anything either. They don't. They vote for who they remember the name for. They don't know the stance of the person, what their penal policy is, whether they think people should go to prison for specific crimes. I mean, most people have no idea. They just have no clue. They vote for a name that sounds good. Well, here's what happens. You end up voting for that, and you end up getting people that you have no idea what their stance is, what they're going to do, and basically what kind of policies they're going to have up on the bench. And they're going to affect you every day if you are in front of them. Frank in Detroit, what do you got to say about that? Frank, can you hear me?
We are dismally underinformed as a populace, and it's really depressing, man. And I was trying to explain to somebody just something really as simple as the Citizens United thing and how it made corporations legal entities like people and where that goes. But the response I generally get is, I ain't got time to worry about that, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, people would rather walk around ignorant. Let
they
someone
would.
Else take care of me and worry about those intricacies, like, for instance, is a corporation a separate entity? Are they treated separately as a person and the taxes and the rules regarding that? than finding out what are the specifics of what I'm doing. You know, there are people that incorporate and have no idea why. There's people that should incorporate and don't, and they have no idea why.
Well, you know, we're almost Pavlovian in our voting practices. You know, if you say the right things, it gets a response, and it doesn't. It has absolutely no positive relation, no positive correlation with how a person thinks, votes, behaves, you know, or stands for. Which is, it's unfortunate. It's actually frightening when you think about it. You know,
what do you think about judges? Do you think we should have them appointed? You know, we just had an election.
I don't think there's any way on earth you could possibly. How can you even defend that? I mean, how can you defend appointing judges?
Appointing, right.
You shove me a couple of dollars, you're on this bench. Shove me a couple more, you're on that bench. I mean, isn't it really obvious where that goes?
I mean, that's really what happens. It's not even that, you know, you get a retired judge. You get a judge in, let's say, a local circuit court here in Michigan. You get, he's going to retire, she's going to retire. And in the interim, you have to have a policy in place to get another judge in there. So you get to have the governor, obviously, on a judiciary committee appointing a judge for a small amount of time. But then that, so I understand that. That makes sense. It does. But then that person has to stand for election. That's what we always should have, is having these judges elected so that we can figure out what's going on with them. What are their stances? The problem is the electorate doesn't care. They don't know who the judges are. They recognize an Irish name, so they vote for it. I mean, they have no idea.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I find it terribly frightening.
Well, unfortunately, that is exactly what goes on in our communities here. Thanks for calling, Frank. I tell you, the main thing here is trying to get it where we get government officials that are accountable to the people. If you don't get that, you'll end up with a rash of Kwamis. You'll end up with people who we have basically no control over while they're in office. Now, listen, you can say you elected Kwame, but let me tell you something, Metro Detroit, you reelected him back, too. That's right. I mean, we knew about this guy. What the heck? What did we put him back in power for? You call me at 248-848-1310. You know what really has gotten my ear up today is what's going on with our airports. I don't want to get molested when I go to the airport. I want security. Yes. I don't mind waiting in line. I don't mind having other measures if they're going to make us safer. But you tell me, whether they're looking at some naked picture of me in the back room is going to make the airport safer, well, then you better go and throw away your Playboys. Because let me tell you something, I don't feel that's going to make anybody any safer. We're not having the terrorists go through those things. There's no way that going through those scanners makes us safer. There's a woman that says more Americans are growing angrier over Transportation Administration, and they admit that it's more intrusive. It's violating our Fourth Amendment right every single time we go to the airport. You call me if you disagree, 248-848-1310. Fallen Warren, what do you got to say about that? Are we actually getting violated our personal rights when we go to the airports now? Or is it a necessary, is it a evil that we have to combat now with our personal liberties?
I agree, and I would like to see the Tea Party. I wonder where they are now. It seems to me that they all too often stop with the Second Amendment. Don't take too much concern when the government violates our Fourth Amendment rights.
Right. Well, you can have guns, right? But just, you know, they don't care if you get naked searches at the airport.
But if you don't mind, I was going to call about the judges, and I did have one question, and I wondered what your thoughts were on this, is that the two main entities that get the populace out to vote are the parties, and we rely on the parties to inform us and to engage us, to make us get to the polls, because the media has just left that job up to, you know, the party, because the media rather said the corporate interest. So my question is, how do we make these issues that are relevant to the lower judges, you know, the circuit court judges, the things they do day to day, and the positions that we need to investigate them for, with what they do day to day, how do we make that important to the parties enough that they will begin to inform their constituents of what issues are should matter on the circuit court and district level judges?
You know, one of the problem is that those are non-party, like you're saying, those are non-party candidates. So you get a district judge who is a right-wing conservative, Christian right. He basically thinks that you're against abortion. You should have school prayer and prayer in schools. Whatever is the right-wing conservative Christian right philosophy, he's running as an independent. He's running as a nonpartisan on that ticket. So you really don't know on the if he's Republican or Democrat, if he's a Tea Party. You don't know because, one, there's not much information on them. And, two, the parties are not supporting them in terms of putting out their issues, putting them in the category of a Democrat or a Republican. So you have to get an electorate that is interested enough to delve into their background, to have an electorate that wants to know on these independent, supposedly independent, because of course they're not, but they're not partisan, supposedly independent, what their policies are, what they plan on doing. But the papers don't really print it. There's not many information sheets. I mean, you can have a judge who's running and he's knocking on doors and you can say, well, what do you think about drunk driving? What do you think about domestic violence? Should the man actually always be arrested as opposed to the woman, where it's 85% of the time? That's what happens.
What do you think about our Fourth Amendment rights? What is that? What is the Fourth Amendment? What does it mean to you to be secure in your person?
That's exactly right. We should have a judge tell us about that before we elect them. Listen, they go through in the Supreme Court in the United States and they put them on a committee and they put them in front of a committee to see what their policies are. And most of the time, you know what those judges do? They say, well, I'm not going to tell you about that. I'm not going to inform you about that.
And they do say that. And you have to just, I mean, and when they do get on the bench, you can ask them what is their judicial philosophy, and that, but they can always hide behind the fact that these, you know, specific issues may come before them. And we're talking about the more Supreme Court justices. But then you find things like when it becomes, it's always an issue of states' rights, except when it's not. When the state of California decided that they wanted to regulate marijuana in their own unique way, it was no longer an issue of states' rights for those states' rights diehards. It all became an issue of federal government needing to go in and arrest patients.
Well, I mean, the issue about having a Supreme Court nominee is they're not elected. It gets back to the election issue. They are appointed, so they don't have to disclose what is their judicial philosophy, what is their specific a feeling on a specific area, abortion, states' rights. They don't have to disclose it. You can go back, if they're judges, and look at their rulings. You can say, this is what you've ruled before, but the electorate doesn't get a chance to decide, do we want this individual there?
Can I ask you one question on that point? You know, even people on the left, there's so many, even people on the left will say things like, I'm not for litmus tests. And I often wonder, why not? Is that just naive, or is there some sort of compelling case in the law that we shouldn't just be able to ask somebody, do you believe that a woman's right to choose is protected in the Constitution, yes or no?
Well, I think one of the reasons is because they don't want to, especially the ones that are appointed, to be able to go in front of that Judiciary Committee, they don't want them to have to get voted down on a specific case. They don't want them to say, well, we think, this is how they believe. They believe in, let's say, pro-choice. And we want the now conservative Congress or a senator who's conservative to rely on that to get his compadres to vote it down. I mean, they want to be able to have these appointees, these nominees, to sail through and to be able to have no problems. And what way back in Bork days, back in the late 80s, we actually stopped that. They actually went and it's very rare to stop a Supreme Court nominee. And they stopped it. They felt that he was actually too conservative. And they blocked it. That's pretty rare, though. You usually don't get that. Mike and Amtramck, what do you got to say about that? Are we not allowing these judges to go on and become elected? Is that a good thing that we're not electing them, or should they actually be appointed?
I'm going with elected because the last election, Carl Levin called me with one of his voicemail things, and
robocall.
Yeah, and I went with his endorsement. Yeah. So it's that simple for me.
Yeah. Well, to me, that is following at least some information. Now, listen. Your issue is: did you go and did you research that person? Did you find out what their stances were?
I didn't have to. It was done by the Democratic Party, and that's good enough for me.
But see, at least you got some kind of information. Now, what if it was a Republican robocall?
I would have disregarded it.
There you go.
Listen, I got a question.
Yeah.
Supreme Court ruling. You there?
Yeah, I got you.
Says that the corporations are individuals now, right?
Well, but corporations were always put in there that can be treated like individuals.
Well,
so they could tax them. It's about taxes, man. They want the taxes.
That's right. That's exactly my point. Why don't they file a 1040 like I have to?
Well,
why are they allowed deductions? I can't deduct my expenses. Why should they be allowed to?
There are different rules with it, though,
Mike. He uses executive order to enforce that for this year because this is a recent ruling, and that'll pay off our national debt.
Well, there are different rules for different types of entities. There
Supreme
are our tax
rules.
Here's the stress.
That's law now.
Our tax laws are so convoluted.
Yeah, but
we need an overhaul of our tax system. Yeah, well,
Supreme Court ruling overruled that. That's my point.
It didn't overrule it in terms of how they're taxed. It overruled it in terms of how they're treated in the court system. Not how they're taxed. That's the problem.
That it means everything.
No, I. You know what? If you were right, that might. But unfortunately,
I know I'm
that's
right.
not. But it, they're
the
taxed different, man.
Move on it.
They are taxed differently by our tax code, which is the most screwed up tax code in the world. Our tax code is so convoluted. If you need a tax attorney to go tell you what you got to do with your taxes, it's too screwed up. We need a simplified tax system.
My point is, when the Supreme Court rules, it's now law, right? That's been with the segregation laws and everything else, abortion, and they've ruled on this. It's law now. It's circumstance every other law.
Yeah, but Mike, it's unfortunately not as simple as that. I wish it was. Thanks for calling. Here's the situation with corporations and how they're treated by the government is this. There's three reasons basically why you want to incorporate. One, it's for protection against actions by creditors against you individually. You want to be in business. You want to incorporate so that when you take on liability, you take on obligations, whether it's with advertising, whether it's with leasing equipment for your business, whatever it is, you want to be able to have that corporate shield so that they can't go to you individually. They're dealing with the corporation because it's not you doing business now. It's a separate person. That's what Mike is thinking about. It's a separate entity that's doing business. So they can say, we can't go in what's called pierce the corporate veil and go individually to the owner of the business on something the business is doing. So they, one, create that shield against creditors, against that liability. And there's lots of different rules with that. But that's basically what one of the rules is to incorporate. And two, it is treated differently in taxes. They tax corporations differently and have different rules for corporations than they do for you as an individual. You want that changed? You go change the tax code. And believe me, it needs to be changed. Corporations get tremendous favor under the tax code. Pay infinitely less percentage taxes than we do as individuals. But you want to change it. It ain't going to get changed by the Supreme Court decision. I promise you that. The Congress has to change the tax code. Man, when I was in law school, I barely understood the current tax code, let alone the new one that came in. I had to learn them both at the same time. It was nuts back in the 80s. It was nuts. Our tax code is so complicated. It's so convoluted. I'm telling you, if you need to have a tax attorney advise you about every single thing about your taxes, it's too complicated. We need a simplified tax code so that we can understand what's going on with corporations, what's going on with our personal returns. And the third reason you want to do a corporate structure is because you want to be able to have different kind of distributions to you. You want to be able to get money, and income-wise, you're going to have to pay all your taxes on that. You basically operate out of a corporation. There's many different ways that they treat that through a corporation, that it shouldn't go to you personally. So there are three reasons, basically, that you should incorporate, and none of them have to do with what's fair. It's not because it's fair. It's because that is how our system is set up, to be able to operate businesses, not personally, but to be able to do it through other types of entities. And that's why corporations are set up not just as persons. They're treated differently. They are considered a person, but they are taxed differently. They are sued differently. Our government considers them different. You want to join this conversation, you call me at 248-848-1310. When we get from the back from the break, we're going to talk about not only this security system at the airport, we're going to talk about how assisted living, how are they doing that out of other entities like a hotel? Can you believe it? An assisted living out of a hotel? You stay tuned. We're going to come back in a minute for Crime Time Live. I'm your host, Scott Weinberg. Stay tuned.
Have you or a loved one been arrested or charged with a crime? Do you want to stay out of jail and keep your record clean? Hi, I'm attorney Scott Weinberg, host of Crime Time Live, heard Saturday mornings 11 to 12 noon on 1310 WDTW. Call my office anytime to protect your rights at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1 or go to our website at 1-800-NO-JAIL-1.com. We have payment plans for everyone's budget. There should never be a price on protecting your rights. Call 1-800-NO-JAIL-1 right now.
Saying that her security screening was basically a sexual assault. And that's what's going on. More Americans are getting angry over it. Are you getting angry over it? One woman is comparing her experience at Lambert Airport to a sexual assault. This lady was flying home from St. Louis to Chicago. Beautiful Chicago. And like all other airline passengers, she had to go through the security first, of course. Now what's going on, though? Basically, we're getting raped through security. When the metal in her artificial knee set off the detectors, she had to go more screening and basically a body search. She had to go through this body scanner, and she was told none was available. So guess what they did? They pat her down. Now, have you gone through security lately? Have you opted out of those scanners in order to get a body search? Well, this is what this lady's saying. She explains her gloved hands. This is the transportation security officer. Her gloved hands touched my breast and went between them. What is going on? We're going on our little vacation to Podunk, Iowa, and we're getting molested going into the airport. She went to the top of her slacks, inserted her hands between her underwear and her skin, put her hands up the backside of her slacks, and of course, patted down her genitals. I'm going to mom's house for a pumpkin pie, and I got to get raped through an airport so that I know that someone else can be secure? I mean, come on. You've got to be kidding me. She said she was shaking. She was crying when she left that room. Under any other circumstance, a person who touched her, she said, without her permission, what would we be? You bet your darn tootin' it'd be a criminal sexual assault. But not there. Man, when you go into the airport and you pass by security, there is a court of appeals case right on that, then you know what you're doing? You're giving up your constitutional right to refuse to be searched. You don't want to be searched? You got to leave. Leave the airport, right? They can search you. Once you get to a secure position in an airport, they're saying you can't refuse. You can't revoke it. That's what the Court of Appeals, the Ninth Circuit Court, is saying now. You think you can leave. You think you can walk out, but you can't now. The ruling from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals says that requiring a potential passenger be allowed to revoke consent to an ongoing airport security search makes little sense in the 9/11 world because there's so much angst. There's so much craziness after 9/11. Once you pass by the security, you're in the airport, you can revoke and leave. But once you pass by the security post, those stupid little lines, that you think that you're only standing in line, what you did was you gave up your right to revoke your permission to search you, and you can't leave. They say such a rule would afford terrorists multiple opportunities to attempt to penetrate the airport security by electing not to fly on the cusp, right? What they're saying is a potential terrorist, some schmuck coming in there, walking in the lines, and he feels he can't get through that security with his holstered gun or with his exploding toothpaste up his butt. Let me tell you something. They're saying that guy's not allowed to leave now. He went by security. He can't just walk in on a whim and walk out. You can go in the airport, but once you pass by that security line, you're the government. You can't revoke it. That's what they're saying. That's what they're talking about. They're saying, and it doesn't even violate our Fourth Amendment. They say it doesn't even apply our Fourth Amendment rights to this. Because the airport search is an administrative search in a highly regulated industry. That's how they get over the application of the Fourth Amendment. They say it is basically a necessary part of providing that type of administration. They can't provide airports without this type of administration control. Oh, you can choose not to go. You can drive to grandma's house, right? You can go on the roads and have anything in your car until you get caught. No one's searching you going across the Ohio border. This is not going from Czechoslovakia to a different country where you got to go through checkpoints. This isn't going from East and West Berlin back in 1952. No way. This, you have free access to our state borders, baby. You can drive anywhere you want with anything until you get caught. No searches. But you walk into that airport, you go by security, you go past that stupid line, they've got you. They've got you under control. They've got you in their grasp. And you basically don't have your Fourth Amendment right to protect you. We're joined by Greg Young, Greg in Melvindale. Greg, can you hear me? Yeah, I lost you, Greg. But that is the issue. Do we have any rights once we pass by that security? Do we have any rights not to go through? And basically, they're saying no. Basically, they're saying no. You give up that right. Is that right? Should we have the ability to say, forget it? Forget that. We don't want to give up our rights. We don't want to be able to say, hey, once we go through security, we can't revoke it. We want to get out of line. Is it enough? Is it enough to say that there's too much terrorism out there? There's too many risks out there? Is that enough to say that we should be able to go through security We don't want to give a terrorist the ability to go in and say, hey, there's too much security today. We want to walk away. You call me at 248-848-1310. Because I tell you something, I think we are giving up way too much after 9/11 to have limited type of, what I would consider limited type of security compared to our personal rights. I don't want to get molested when I go through a security line. But I also don't want them having to look at me nude. Not that they really want to look at me nude, but look at me with all my clothes on, look at all my genitals, look at everything that's going on, simply because they could catch some guy with an exploding toothpaste tube. You call me at 248-848-1310. I don't know. I could be wrong. I could be not reasonable about it. I might be wrong about whether or not I think that should happen. But I'll tell you one thing. I do not want people searching me. I do not want people going in and searching and violating my rights. I don't want that to happen. We got a treat today. We're talking to, we got Greg Young on the line. Hey, Greg, how you doing?
Doing well, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing good, but I'm crazy this morning. I don't want people, I don't want to go into the security line and give up my rights to be searched, to not be searched. I don't want people touching me like that. I don't want my clients to feel that they give up their rights when they do that. What is it about governmental places? What is it about when governmental entities feel that they can abuse our rights like that? I mean, I know that, you know, we give up our rights when we go into certain types of buildings. Let's say, you know, we're in the Senate. Or we're in places where they got to keep these peoples safe. But I should, one, be able to revoke that right. You know what I mean? When I go into the airport, I should be able to say, hey, I don't want to get searched, and I should be able to leave. But they're saying no. No, we don't have that right anymore.
Well, you know, the government has a lot of power, particularly in this day and age, with the, and it's a misnomer, the Patriot Act. It's not very patriotic. It certainly doesn't comply with the Constitution as it was originally written. But as you know, the argument is that you don't have to fly.
But that's the thing. So, go drive to grandmother's house. Don't go in the airport, right?
That's right. If you don't like it, don't go. You know, and the airports, as you know, are a governmental entity. They're run by a governmental background, even though they're having private companies use them. So you have a blend of public and private. And it goes back to, you know, the old days where you go to a restaurant and they can refuse the right to serve anyone except for legal reasons. It's sort of that principle at the airport. If you don't like it, don't fly. And it's, you know, in this day and age, we don't have high-speed rail like a lot of other countries and stuff, so we don't have a lot of options other than to fly sometimes. So it's a sad situation. And there's really not much you can do about it civilly. The recent cases that you were talking about, you know, the gentleman, you may have a right to invasion of privacy, but again, the argument's going to be, and let's be practical, most jurors are going to say, well, I don't... Yeah, you know, I don't want somebody on a plane that hasn't been thoroughly searched. So you're going to have a problem, even if the government allows this to go on. You're going to have a lot of people complaining.
Well, maybe we should have those security going by state to state. You know, you have high-speed rail. I mean, it's not like Europe where you're going to get searched in every country going through the borders. Well, maybe we should search everybody going to a different state, too.
Well, you know, hopefully it won't come to that, but as you know, they're trying to use the national ID card. That's always been batted around for a long time now. So we don't really want to go to a national ID card and, you know, like you say, go state to state and have checkpoints at every state. Although, for those that have been in California and Arizona, boy, for decades, you know, I lived in California 20 years ago, and you could be just driving up the freeway there, going down I-5 or whatever, or 101, all of a sudden there's a checkpoint. It wasn't back then for security reasons. It was for immigration, but now they call it security and immigration. But you were subject to search for no reason at all. I have actually been subject to search for no reason. I just pulled over because I was driving a box van, happened to be carrying some stuff for an employer I worked for, and, you know, they searched it, you know, no probable cause. It's just a checkpoint.
Well, that's why we always got to protect your rights. You have any question about that, you call 248-848-1310. I want to switch subject for a second because I had recently another client that actually went on to, now this wasn't a governmental entity. He went on to a private corporation's place of business. And they, one, they got into a fight. And two, they had their private security kick him off. I wanted to turn, what are your rights? When you go into a place that's open to the public, a store, let's say like a Gap, and you go in, what are their rights to control their those customers? And can they, for instance, abuse you? What rights do individuals have when they go into that?
Well, they can't abuse you, but they do have an amazing amount of rights because it is a private entity. What we have to remember is, strangely enough, to a great degree, the Constitution, state or federal, doesn't always apply to private entities. We had a situation with the Great Lakes Crossing Mall and Fairlane for a while, Fairlane Mall, where, you know, groups of youngsters were gathering, and basically they limited it. I think it still exists for a certain period of time where you can't gather if you're under 17 year old or 18 years old along those lines. And that was tested, and that was actually upheld because it's very similar to, you have a right to kick anybody out of your house you want. Although there are some constraints on that, such as you can't, you know, refuse to serve somebody because of their race or religion or something along those lines. But you can, believe it or not, do it on age, in particular young age. So your constitutional rights don't apply fully in a private setting.
Well, that actually seems like a complicated area of the law. We got Marquise and Melvindale. You got a question for Attorney Greg Young?
Yeah, I was at a shop, car dealership, yesterday.
Marquis, you got to speak up a little. You said you were in a car dealership yesterday?
Yeah, I was at a car dealership yesterday, used car dealership.
What happened?
I went there to get my car because they were supposed to be fixing it. It was supposed to be done Wednesday. So I went up there yesterday, and it still wasn't done. So I told the guy, one of the employees, that, you know, it was a huge inconvenience for me. I haven't been out of a car for a week. I have a newborn son. You know, I can't take him to the doctor or anything like that. You know, and I asked him for a loaner previous before that, before yesterday. He told me, already told me no. So I said, you know, this is unprofessional. You told me you needed a week. Today's Friday. My car still isn't done.
So you wanted to get your car done. They weren't getting it done. What happened?
The owner came out. He walked to me, put his hands on me. We started to fight, me and him, and then his employees jumped in.
So he assaulted you and his employees assaulted you?
Yeah.
And was it on? Was it still on their property?
On their property, in their lot.
Well, let's start with they can't do that. It doesn't have anything to do with the government or Constitution or anything like that. But in civil law, at what we call common law, and it's in statutes, a person cannot assault. And really what we're talking about, and Scott is very well versed in this, is assault and battery. People think that they have to touch you. If they put you in reasonable fear of harm, and it's reasonable that they could carry out that harm, even if they don't touch you, you would have a civil action if their actions were unwarranted. So regardless if it's a private setting or not, you have absolute rights not to be touched at all by these people. They can call the police or things like that. But if they're touching you for an unreasonable reason, it's a civil action. Now, taking in mind that you've seen private security guards and things like that, they can do that, but there has to be some reason. They can control their premises, but if you're not being aggressive and you're not being violent or any way intruding into the peaceable area, they don't have a right to touch you like that
Did they injure you in any way? What else did they do, Marky?
A pit bull attack. They dropped their dog locked onto my arm while they were fighting me. Got the dog off my arm, and the owner of the shop hit me in the head with a shovel.
Oh, my. Where, you in the head?
Where was the pit bull?
The pit bull was in the area where we were fighting. It was on a chain, but they got me so close to the dog, it was able to grab me. You know, I went to the hospital last night, and I had to, you know, I'm on all type of medication. I had to take, I had to get the shots. I'm on Norcos. I'm on antibiotics, you know.
What about that, Greg? What if they have, like, animals protecting their stores like that? What are the rights of individuals to be protected from getting bit by a pit bull?
Well, in Michigan, a dog bite is what we call strict liability, Scott. In other words, in the old days, you had to prove that the dog had bitten before or was somehow the owner knew it was dangerous. These days, it's strict liability. There's no one free bite, as we call it. And what happens is, as long as a person is not trespassing, in other words, is what we call a licensee that is allowed to be on the land, or a business invitee there for a business purpose, such as this gentleman, as long as you're not technically a trespasser, the dog biting a person is strict liability. They're strictly liable for the damages. Now, if they're using the dog as security, which they're allowed to do, their only defense would be that you were trespassing, but you went there to pick up your car. So you're not only not a trespasser, you're what we call a business invitee, and they have a heightened duty. They have a higher duty to you. Again, your case is going to come down to, you know, kind of the he said, she said. They're going to, of course, claim, you know, well, you were being unreasonable or whatever, and, you know, they always say that, unfortunately. But that's why we have juries. Juries would ferret that out, and, you know, if their actions were unreasonable, and it sounds like they were, I mean, my goodness, they unleashed a pit bull on you and had a shovel out there and multiple people, if their actions were unreasonable and over the top, you would have a civil action against them.
Well, we'll take care of you. And, you know, I'd stay after the show, Marquis, and we'll try to handle those rights. You have any other questions, you can call Greg at 248-855-1500 during the week. But we got him right now, and we got him for free, which is great. Greg, look, what is the issue about that? How is it possible that we can protect ourselves once we go into these types of public, I guess they hold themselves out to the public, but we don't know. I mean, I just, let's say you're going to a bar, right? And you go into a bar, and how do we make sure that our rights are protected when we get people that are, let's say they're getting served alcohol in there, and we're in a bar and we get beat up by some drunk in a bar? What are our rights then?
Well, that actually, we do have rights. There's two levels of rights, as you know, Scott. One is, of course, the criminal aspect of it. The person who's assaulting you, drunk or otherwise, obviously can be tried criminally or charged criminally. But setting that aside for the moment, a bar or any place that serves liquor, could be a nice restaurant, doesn't matter what it is, could be the Elks Club, they have what's called dram shop liability. And if a bar or any place that serves alcohol for a profit serves somebody, and this is the key, while they are visibly intoxicated, then they are liable for the damage that that visibly intoxicated person has done, such as an assault, or most commonly, you know, the person gets drunk at a bar, served one last drink while they were visibly intoxicated, goes out and gets in a car accident and hurts you. They are, the bar, as, along with the person that was drunk, are both liable. But Michigan, unfortunately, with our, while it's now returned, our Supreme Court has been very, very conservative in this area. And you have to show, it's, you know, bars are allowed to get people drunk, and that makes some sense, maybe. I mean, that's why a lot of people go to a bar. You're allowed to get drunk at a bar. That's not illegal. It's not illegal for the bar to get you drunk. What is illegal is a bar cannot serve a person that last drink if that person is visibly intoxicated.
That seems so subjective.
And whatnot, they can't serve you that drink. If they do, then they're liable both criminally but civilly as well.
That seems so subjective. You know what I mean?
You got to
have this guy. He's the bartender. He's not educated about that in any way. He's not a medical practitioner. He doesn't give anybody a PBT, that preliminary breath test. He's got to just look there and say, okay, sir, you've had enough. That's all he has to do?
That's all he has to do. Yep, and he doesn't know. Like you say, he can't give him a breath test or anything like that. And, you know, some people can really serve or hold their alcohol. It's not uncommon for, you know, an alcoholic, for example, some of them to be able to drink 12 beers and not show it, but they're still hammered, and there's still a danger, and they still can assault. So it's a real problem. The bigger problem, though, in Michigan is the Michigan Supreme Court has ruled that not only do you have to show that they were visibly intoxicated, but you have to do it by evidence independent of yourself. In other words, you got to have other people at a minimum saying it. In other words, expert testimony, how we used to be able to show it, this was just recently, we would hire a toxicologist who would say, okay, this person is 200 pounds, his blood alcohol level was 0.28, and this assault occurred at a certain time, so we know he was very drunk. You can't use that expert testimony unless you have people who say that they saw this guy being visibly intoxicated. Even though it's so clear this man was extremely intoxicated by his blood alcohol level, you can't have experts, toxicologists, police, or anything testify that the man was intoxicated unless they actually physically saw him and saw him getting served.
That seems ridiculous. It just seems unconscionable. Why is that?
Yeah, well, it is. It's designed to protect the business interests, and that's kind of what we have in at least in our Supreme Court.
Right, and now we've got a conservative Supreme Court again.
Well, that's it. The current court, which has only been this way for about 4 months, it's probably going to be pretty reasonable. But with the recent election, it's reverting back just the way it was for the last 12 years.
You want to call us, you call us at 248-848-1310. Greg, thanks for joining us on the show and keeping our rights protected and basically figuring out every way we can protect us, not just criminally, obviously, where we can do this, but civilly, too. You know, next week we're going to get that to that that nursing issue. We didn't get to it today, but I tell you, I want to find out how we protect ourselves from the nursing home. Hey, Greg, thanks for calling us. One of the issues here is, of course, when is there a difference? When is there a difference between our rights to remain safe in a governmental controlled body, whether that body is a building, whether that body is an area? When are our rights to be able to be protected in some governmental structure, and when are our rights protected in a private structure, a building, let's say your own home, some type of private entity? When do those merge and when do those stay separate? You know, you get back to the issue of the airport. Why is it that I give up my right to be free from an illegal search of my person, whether it's through a picture or through someone touching me? Why do I give up that right when I walk into a governmental structure? A building, an airport, somewhere they're saying, is it under administrative control? And therefore, I'm giving up my otherwise protected constitutional right to be free from these searches. Why is that? Is that fair? And if it isn't fair, is it something that should be allowed? Should we go where our attorney Greg Young says, hey, you have a choice of not going to the airport? Because that seems reasonable, right? You don't have to go to the airport. Go drive to grandma's house. But is it true that when we actually go into that airport and we pass by security, is it fair that we are now giving up our ability to revoke our permission to now see if we are a danger, basically, to the rest of the community, to the airplane we're about to board? Do you think that's fair? You call me 248-848-1310. And you let me know whether or not you think that's fair. Because I tell you something, when I get on a plane, I want to know that the guy sitting down that row isn't a terrorist. But is it fair that I'm giving up my right to be free from an unreasonable search of my person that I don't give explicit permission to search me? Is it fair that the only way to make sure that potential terrorist sitting down the row for me is not having the ability to blow up that plane, is it fair that I have to give up my right to be free from that search? Some people would say yes, obviously. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals does. Do you? Do you feel that's the case? Well, let me tell you, when you're traveling this week for Thanksgiving and you're sitting at that airport line, and you realize you just gave up your right to go and walk away, you think about what I'm saying. Is it fair? Is that a justifiable privilege that you've given up because you want to go and fly to grandma's house? You look at your own rights. You see whether or not it's fair for you to give up that right when you walked into that and passed that security line. Some people would say yes. Some people would say no. But I tell you something, when I'm on that plane, I want to be secure. I want to be free from worry that it's got to get blown up because some security guard at the beginning of the line didn't take enough precaution to go and search that person. I want to be free from that worry. But man, I tell you, I don't want anybody frisking my wife. I don't want anybody frisking my daughter. But it turns out, you know what? That's probably the only way that you can walk on that plane and feel some kind of security. Do you remember what it was like before 9/11? Do you remember what it was like before 9/11, 2001? What kind of security did they have? Barely any. You get on that plane, you didn't know what was going on. You don't know what's happening. Well, let me tell you something. It's because we give up the ability to know what's happening on that plane at many different stages. And I'll give you this to think about. When's the last time you looked at the curriculum vitae of the pilot? How do you know that maintenance operator that's fueling that plane knows what the heck he's doing? You have no idea. When you buy that ticket to get on that plane, you give up your ability to know anything. You are putting chance to the wind, baby. You are saying, I am giving up my knowledge and security to people that I don't know what's going on because you trust the airline industry. And that is really what we're doing. We're trusting people that we say know more than us. We do it every day. This is Crime Time Live. I'm Scott Weinberg. I'm your attorney focusing on your rights. And I want you to be safe, safe and free, safe and secure, not just at the airport, but in your car, in your homes, when you walk into a store. You be safe, you be secure. You join us next week on Crime Time Live. Take care.